Well, it's really been an encouraging day for me. I'm not sure. I can't go back and see all of the statistics, but we had over 400 in Bible class today, for at least as far as I know, the first time. Had 405. So that's a milestone. We keep hitting those milestones. Also, I'm really impressed the congregation could sing the Magnificat. That's not an easy song to sing, and you did a really great job, and I'm impressed with that. It's a beautiful song. I wanted to start out asking a question, but I know it's a question that many of you, maybe very few of you, can really relate to, but my question is, have you ever been lost in the woods? Being lost in the city is pretty bad, but it's not as bad as being lost in the woods at night. And I mean, when you're in the city, you know that if you keep driving long enough, if you don't run out of gas, that you're gonna get out of the city, or you're gonna come to something that you recognize or something for too long. But whenever I was a kid, we always had lots of dogs. My dad raised registered beagles, and so we had lots of dogs, ran field trials with beagles. But we also, just for our own fun, kept a coon dog all the time, always had one coon dog. And if you don't know anything about coon dogs, you don't know how valuable they are. I mean, it's not unusual 20 years ago for somebody to pay $5,000 for a good coon dog. Really. And now, my dad never paid $5,000 for a coon dog. But we always had a coon dog. And it was lots of fun because you could, one thing about hunting like that is you could take as many people as you wanted to, and you didn't have to be quiet. And you could turn the dog loose, and in essence, you just chased the dog. And the dog would hit a trail, and our place, behind our acreage was a section of land that, to my knowledge, had never, ever been harvested, the timber on it. And I see, as I go around here, that there's some around here also. I haven't seen a great deal of it, but there was a lot of palmetto. And some of you know what that is because there's some in the area around here. But in that area, the palmetto would grow up about head high, and it was just almost solid in that 640 acres. And so we would go, we would take the dog, and I remember taking the dog one time and had a friend or two with me, and I was never concerned about being lost because I always felt like I could, you know, I always had a sense of direction. And so we took the dog and didn't turn the dog loose until we got to that section, and then it went on for miles. And the land, our land, lay along the Tensaw River, which runs into the Black River, which runs into the Mississippi River. And so it's a navigable river. It's a large river. And so that was always the landmark. You know, you always kept the river on this side or a certain side of you, and you knew that if you walked far enough, you'd hit the river and you could find your way home. And so I never was really concerned about being lost. But we hunted that night and for a few hours, and we always wore black gum boots because you were wading through sloughs and never knew which direction the dog was going to go, and you had to stay with him until you got him. So sometimes it might be 3 o'clock in the morning before you, once you turned him loose, you had to bring him home with you. And Dad didn't want you to come home without his dog, so we had to catch the dog. And so it was in the early morning hours, and I was about ready to go home, and had been keeping in my mind all this time the direction to go home. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a river appeared. And it appeared on the wrong side of me. And I didn't know I was lost. I didn't feel lost. But I was lost. And I can't tell you how it made me feel to go over and look at that river, and the river was flowing backwards. And I don't know. I just kept trying to figure, how had I made a loop that would put the river on this side of me instead of this side of me? And I just couldn't figure it out on it. And I kept telling the guys with me, I said, the river says that home is that way, but it's not. It's that way. But I sat down for a while and had to talk to myself to persuade myself, because my mind was saying, I know that the house is that way, about 4 miles, but the river is saying that it's this way. And I had to keep telling myself, I know the river did not reverse its flow tonight. And so I know that the river, that my house has to be that way. But I promise you, every step that I made toward home until I reached the landmark that I recognized, and that takes a while in the night, and you would go hunting on a night when there was no moon, and so it was really black, dark. Every step I took felt wrong. I just felt like I was getting further and further and further away from home, and I really got concerned before I finally came upon a landmark. And when I finally got home, it's just, I just had that uneasy feeling the whole time. Even after I got home, I still felt uneasy about it. It bothered me that I could have gotten that lost. It's kind of like a friend of mine went squirrel hunting with his father-in-law, and after they had passed a tree that he recognized the third time, he said, "We're lost, aren't we?" And his father-in-law said, "No, we're just a little turned around." And he said, "Well, I've been turned around several times in my life and just thought I was lost then." But, you know, it's hard for us guys to admit that we were lost, but I was lost and didn't know it. And that has served me in a really strange way in my life, because as I study, I make parallels of things that are in my life, and there's a parallel that to me that makes sense, and I hope it'll make some sense to you. And my sense of direction, my being lost and not knowing I was lost, they make something to keep that from happening, and it's called a compass. And I never did like to fool with it, because I just didn't think that you could hardly get me lost in the woods. And so I very rarely carried a compass. But the times that I did, it's a fascinating little instrument. And the early ones were naturally occurring lodestones that they would balance. And someone learned that it always pointed directly north. And so with that, it changed navigation. It changed people on the seas, because prior to this time, all of the ships had to stay within sight of land everywhere they went. But now they could go out even on a night that was overcast and stormy and they couldn't see the stars, and they could still keep a course because of this compass. And so a compass is a really neat little instrument. And in my parallel, I parallel in my life that your compass in your life is your conscience. And God has given each one of us a conscience that serves as a compass. And we're all in the process of building faith, and that's what we're all about. And the challenge of every Christian is to build an effective faith. And an effective faith is one that is big enough and capable of including all truth. And I ask myself, and I ask you, what do you do when you're studying your Bible and you come across a piece of a puzzle of information that doesn't fit into your scene as you're putting your puzzle together? And you've got this piece and it just doesn't fit. You try to make it fit every way you possibly can and it just doesn't fit. Or maybe there's something that happens. There's a reality that happens in life that is so contrary to what you believe, is so contrary to what you feel, that you just don't know how to make that fit into your piece of puzzle, into your framework, into your faith. What do you do then? Well, I think most folks at that point just throw it away and try to forget it as if it didn't exist. But every single bit of truth, every reality has its place in real faith, and you don't have to be afraid of those things. And if you have to deny some truth or ignore some reality in order to maintain your faith, then you don't have a real faith. And you're having to carry your faith rather than your faith carrying you. And I promise you, if you have a real, true faith, a faith that's based on truth, you don't have to carry it. It'll carry you. And that's the whole point of having faith. That when you have faith and you come to difficult times in your life, then your faith will carry you through those difficult times. You don't have to have all of the answers. You don't have to satisfy your curiosity about everything, but your faith will carry you through those times. And truth is a crucial foundation of faith. And your conscience is your connection, the way that you connect to truth. We're all on a journey. Our body is on a journey. Our soul is on a journey. The body's got to stop to make the grave. But that's not even the end of it. It's going to be resurrected. And so we're on a journey. Our soul doesn't die. And so we're on a journey. And God has given us a conscience to point us in the direction of truth. Now we have to treat that instrument properly. And we have to have the proper respect for it. Because you can mess with the compass and you can fix it so that it doesn't work correctly. You can put it in environments that it doesn't work correctly. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But God gave every one of us a conscience with a basic knowledge of right and wrong that gives direction to us in this life. And there are, and as we studied in the early part of the book of Romans, there are some things that affect how our conscience works. God, he says in Romans chapter 2, that even the Gentiles who didn't have the law do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not a law become a law unto themselves. Their conscience is also bearing witness. Well, what are their consciences bearing witness to? They're bearing witness to the fact that they know truth. There is certain truth that they know, that even the Gentiles who didn't have the law of Moses are aware of certain truths, because God, and he goes on and says that God has written it on their hearts. And so there's certain truth that God has implanted in us, and our conscience, if we have not abused our conscience, will point us in the direction of that truth, and it will keep us moving in at least the general direction, right direction of truth. And Romans chapter 2 says God will judge man according to truth. He's not going to judge you according to what you don't know, but what you do know. And the man who is outside of Christ, the man who's living under law, will be judged by that law, that his standard of right and wrong. And we talked about that when we went through the first three chapters of Romans. And he says in Romans chapter 1, verse 20 and 21, that man is without excuse. The Gentiles are without excuse. And the reason they're without excuse is because he has revealed certain truth to every person, and he expects every person to respond to that truth. It moves us in a certain direction. Paul will say in his address on Mars Hill later in the book of Acts that God has done certain things in this world. He has set certain things in order so that man would feel after him and find him, though he's not far from any of us. And so that conscience points us toward God. And when we move with that conscience, then we're moving toward God and toward truth. In Acts chapter 24, verse 15 and 16, there Paul was before Felix. And he said, I have this same hope. He's being accused by the Jewish leaders. And as he makes his defense before Felix, he says, I have the same hope in God as these men. And then he tells exactly what it is, that there will be a resurrection of both the righteous and the wicked. And then he says, so, because I have this hope, so I strive always to keep my conscience clear before God and man. Keeping our conscience clear. And young people, there's not anything that you can give yourself to that's more important than that. That you keep your conscience clear. And you listen to what your conscience says and you respond to it. In 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 19, it talks about those who have rejected a good conscience. In 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5, it talks about those who have wandered away from a good conscience. And so it is possible for you not to give it its proper respect and wander away from it and it doesn't respond properly. It's also possible for you to evaluate it and just decide, I don't want to follow it anymore. I know that I should do this, but I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do this. And he says, and those have pierced themselves through with many sorrows whenever you don't listen to your conscience. And he also says that it turns, that people, when they turn from that, they turn to meaningless talk. Talk that does not include truth is meaningless talk. It's just a waste of breath. It is possible to maintain a pure conscience. Train up a child in the way he should go, and that's our responsibility as parents. And we need to be, and I know that many, if not all of these things are things that you know, but we need to be reminded of this as parents and grandparents. And we need to view our kids in light of our responsibility is to train that child's conscience properly and to teach them what's right and to enforce that positively and negatively, to let them know the consequences of doing wrong. And all of this is involved in training that good, pure conscience within that child, which will act for the rest of his life as a true guide for the remainder of his life. We all know, and we've talked about before, the fact that the conscience is not an infallible guide. Paul said, I've lived before God in all good conscience unto this day in Acts chapter 23. And if you go back to Acts chapter 9, then he had been guilty of killing Christians. But it's a pretty incredible thing, and I think that it's very highly likely that one of the reasons that God chose Paul for the mission that he chose him is because Paul was very, very sensitive to his conscience. And he said, I've lived before God unto this day. It had been important to him, incredibly important to him, that he live in sync with his conscience up to that point. And when people don't live in sync with their conscience, then your life is going to become a disaster before it's over. But if you do live in sync with it, Hebrews 9:14, how much more then, just some verses about the conscience, how much more then will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself unblemished to God, cleanse our consciences from acts that lead to death so that we may serve the living God? And I say by necessary inference in that passage that he says if you don't have a clear conscience, then you cannot serve the living God. And there's lots of reasons why. Because you've got a part of your life that you're protecting. You've got a part of your life that you can't let God into, that you can't let your brother into. You've got some things that you're closeting, some things that you're hiding from others, and you can't be real and you can't be sincere, and you become hypocritical. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 7, it speaks of a weak conscience, and that's because of a lack of knowledge. Jeremiah 10:23, it's not in man that walks to direct his own steps. And so Psalm 119:105 says God has directed our steps. He's given us a lamp and a light to direct our steps. And it educates our conscience. The conscience can be defiled. You can put it in situations where it doesn't operate properly. If you've ever played with a compass before, you know that there are certain situations you can get into so that that compass will not work properly. If you get inside a metal building, for instance, it won't work properly. And I would suggest to you that in a similar way, we can put ourselves and our consciences in an environment where it doesn't work properly. The back seat of a car, on a dark night, on a lonely road, your conscience may not work properly. And you deliberately put yourself in situations. You allow yourself to be put in situations where your conscience is just pushed aside. Or just going along for the ride with a group that you know that drinks or uses drugs or does things that are immoral. And you put yourself in a situation which affects the accurateness of your conscience. It becomes dull by constant exposure to ungodliness. And that addresses me, and I need to be reminded of that because I turn the TV on entirely too much. And there are things, I'm watching something, and then that goes off, and it stays on, and there is stuff that comes on that nobody in my family, including me, should be watching. And we just have it on. And we see it over and over and endlessly. And what does it do to us? What does it do to our conscience? The first few times we see something like that, it bothers us. And then after a while, we don't even notice it, do we? We go to a movie and somebody says, well, I heard that there was some bad language in that. And we think back, was there some bad language in that movie? You ever been there? That happened to me really recently. And I thought, was there some bad language in that movie? I don't remember it. Boy, that's a bad thing, isn't it? That's putting ourselves in a situation. You can stay away from these situations and your circumstances, but it really takes a strong will and a determined individual. But you know what? It strikes me that anything less than that, and you're not going to make it to heaven. If you are not willing to discipline yourself, and if you don't, if you're not strong, and staying away from situations and circumstances like that. There are lots of dangers associated with a defiled conscience. Without a pure conscience, you are morally and spiritually lost. Just like I was lost. Just like you can be lost. When you get in territory that you don't know the way and you don't have a compass. And it's really a lot more frightening than being physically lost, and one day we're going to really know that. The conscience testifies to us, and at the same time it testifies to God. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 12. Now this is our boast, Paul says. Our conscience testifies that we've conducted ourselves, and especially in our relationships with you, in holiness and sincerity that are from God. We have done so not according to worldly wisdom, but according to God's grace. And so he says, my conscience testifies about my life. It testifies to us, and it testifies to God. Romans chapter 9, verse 1, I speak the truth in Christ. I'm not lying. My conscience also bears witness in the Holy Spirit. And the results of having a defiled conscience, 1 Timothy 4, 1 and 2, having their conscience seared, as with a hot iron. We've all seen human flesh that got burned. And we've seen and know something about the fact that it kills those nerve endings. And that you can literally, if you're burned seriously enough, you can take a pin and you can stick it in and you can't even feel it. And he says that's what happens to our conscience. And so it's a delicate instrument. It really is a delicate instrument. It's an incredible thing that God's given to us. But if you don't handle it properly and you just play with it as if it's something unimportant and you don't listen to it and you don't respond to it, then it can be damaged beyond repair. Does everybody have a conscience? Yes. Does everybody have a functioning conscience? No. There are some people whose conscience doesn't bother them regardless of what they do. even to the point of abusing children and killing someone, and their conscience doesn't bother them. I used to not believe that, but I do now. I've met some people and looked in their eyes, and I do believe that there are people that their conscience didn't bother them a bit when they did something that was more horrendous than I could imagine someone doing. You don't have to deliberately set out to sear your conscience. It will be seared if you ignore it and you neglect it and you don't listen to it and don't respond to it. And so, by way of application of this lesson, if your conscience were to testify right now about your life, what would it say? Do you, in fact, have a clear conscience before God and before man? You can have. Remember our passage there in 2 Corinthians where he talked about the blood of Christ who through the eternal Spirit offered himself cleanse our conscience from acts that lead to death? That's one of the beautiful things about the gospel, that you can be living with a guilty conscience. But if you have the desire to have that conscience cleaned, God's made a way, and it's called repentance. And don't be so proud that you don't use it. We all have to use it. We all do. And if you're living with a conscience that's anything less than completely clean today, then God invites you to come to Him. We must learn the truth, tell the truth,